Dr. Ross Walker for Friendly's Pharmacy Subiaco. 6 naturopaths, 6 pharmacists and 12 doctors.
24 to 1. If you have a question for Dr. Ross Walker about your health, by all means, give us a call. Number 9221882. Good afternoon, Ross. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Pete. How are you, my friend?
I'm fantastic, actually. So pretty pleased with that. Hopefully everyone else out there listening is feeling terrific, but we know some people are struggling with some sorts of health issues, so that's why the phone lines are open, everyone. 9221882. Ross, we go over this many, many times, but it's about the calcium scoring, and you want to talk about it being the best predictor for heart risk.
Well, I've mentioned it before quite a bit, as you know, but last week a study came out in the Journal of American College of Cardiology. This was just under 5,000 patients over 10 years, so it was a huge study, and it showed 77% of the patients aged between 45 to 75 were deemed eligible to go on to statin therapy because they were at strong risk for heart disease. But the problem was half of them had a zero calcium score. And when they looked at their event rates without statins over 10 years, they were so low that the statins wouldn't have done anything for them at all. Now, have you heard that mentioned before, Pete?
I hadn't.
No, I'm sure you have heard me say it thousands of times.
Yeah. I hadn't heard it once before. I've heard it about a million.
Yeah, and so this is yet another study that confirms what I've been saying for years, that you should really ignore your cholesterol but look at your calcium score.
Mm-hmm.
If your calcium score is high, you should be on a statin. If your calcium score is low or zero, you don't need a statin. Now, of course, if you've had a heart attack, a stent or a bypass, I think a statin should be part of your therapy. But this obsession the medical profession seems to have with lowering everyone's cholesterol just because it's elevated has absolutely no scientific basis. And this is yet another study that confirms what I've been saying for about 15 years.
Let's just, one more time for the records, let's just go through the exact procedure to get that calcium score.
Okay, a coronary calcium score is done in any major hospital or a good radiology practice. It's a CT scanner that takes a non-invasive picture of the coronary arteries. It measures coronary calcium, which in itself doesn't matter, but it's a marker for coronary fat. So the more calcium you have, which is very easily measured on the CT scan,
mm-hmm.
the more fat you have. So if your score is zero, you don't have a lot of fat, and so therefore having a pill that has many side effects over a long period of time to lower your cholesterol is of no value. So if you've just gone to your doctor and your cholesterol's high and he immediately wants to put you on a statin, say no, I'd prefer a coronary calcium score. Now, I think all males at 50 or females at 60 should have a calcium score as a routine and not the one where they inject you. You don't need an injection or dye. It's
yep.
just a snapshot of the arteries. It's a very quick test and it's inexpensive. And if you're 35 and your cholesterol's up, unless you've got a rampant family history, you should go nowhere near a calcium score or a statin. I'm saying males at 50, females at 60, and a little bit earlier if there is that bad family history or you've got multiple risks for heart disease such as blood pressure, diabetes, cigarette smoking and cholesterol.
And Ross, comparatively speaking, we're not talking about stacks of money to get one of these calcium scores.
No,
that you
no.
Speak
look,
of.
Look. The good lab. Say, for example, I have a radiology practice under my practice, which I have no financial involvement with. They charge $120 for the calcium score. Now, to know whether you need to be on a pill for the rest of your life, I think it's money well spent.
Okay, 9221882 if you have a question for Dr. Ross Walker. This was alarming. Some statistics in from China, Ross. Cigarettes kill 1 in 3 Chinese men. Is that correct?
Absolutely. This is what they're saying now. That
wow.
This latest study out of the research suggests that, wait for this, Chinese men now smoke 1/3 of the world's cigarettes, and 1 in 3 of all young men in China will eventually be killed by tobacco. And unfortunately, still 2/3 of young men in China smoke, usually starting before age 20. And you see, the problem is there's a lot of myths about tobacco in China. And I was there 20 years ago teaching the Chinese cardiologists how to do a technique called transesophageal echo. And they don't use sedation over there. Well, they didn't 20 years ago. So you put a tube down someone's throat in Australia under sedation so the person doesn't remember it. But I had conscious patients on the table, 10 to 20 cardiologists standing around smoking whilst I was doing the procedure. And I said to them, look, in my country, through the interpreter, I said, in my country, it's considered rude to smoke in front of people. They said to me, in our country, if you don't smoke, you're not a man. And that was the attitude back then.
Yeah.
There was also this mistaken belief that because they were Asian, they weren't as affected by smoke. They also thought it was quite easy to quit smoking, and that also tobacco was an intrinsic and ancient part of Chinese culture. It's really very disturbing to think that one in three young men in China will die because of their habit.
It's a massive issue, clearly, when you've got that level of impact on the community. You're one in three, extraordinary. 9221882, we're with Dr. Ross Walker. Over to you. Lines are free. Scott's in Thornley. Good afternoon.
G'day, guys. Just on that calcium score.
Yes, Scott.
I just went through that this month. Now, I had a couple of episodes of shortness of breath. You know, things that we all get.
Yep.
I went and saw my doctor. He sent me for a calcium CT scan.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a score of 243.
Okay. How old are you, mate?
I'm 50.
Okay.
50,
right.
was a heavy smoker.
Yep.
Anyway, that wasn't overly alarming, but they put me on Crestor, 10 milligrams.
Yes, yep, totally agree.
Now, I had another episode at work, actually, where I got shortness of breath, and so I went to see a cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they put me straight in for an angiogram.
Yep.
Now, when they did the angiogram, one of my arteries was 90% blocked, plus 90% blocked.
Yep.
And I had a stent put in straight away, and the cardiologist said to me, you're lucky you walked in here under your own steam. That's how bad it was. Now, I've got two other arteries that are 60 to 70% blocked, which they're going to treat with drugs at the moment.
Yeah, and Scott, I think it's a really important story. If I had a 50-year-old man with your story and a calcium score of 243, I would have immediately done a stress echo and immediately had you in for an angiogram.
Yeah,
and also, certainly, you do need statin therapy.
Yeah, and the thing is, to anybody listening out there, I mean, I had no symptoms of how serious my condition was, other than the fact that I jumped off a boat one day and went for a bit of a swim and came back really tired. Now, I'm normally a really good swimmer.
Yep.
That's what it made me think, that's not normal.
No,
that's the only thing, that was the only thing that sent me to the doctor. So if you're 50 and you're not feeling too good, go and get yourself checked.
Well, mate, if you're 50 anyhow, you should have a calcium score to know where you are.
Good on you, Scott.
Great story, sorry.
Great story.
Scott,
really,
thanks,
yeah, really appreciate you sharing that with us, Scott in Thornley. We're with Dr. Ross Walker, 9221882. If you've got a question about any particular medical issues you'd like to speak with the doc about. Now, Ross, we go to the myth file. Antioxidants cause cancer.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing, and this is a myth, but there was a study recently released on October the 7th, 2015, in a reasonable journal called Science Transitional Medicine. It was done out in Sweden, and they basically showed that two antioxidants that aren't in common use, a thing called N-acetylcysteine and another thing called Trolox, which is a synthetic analogue of vitamin E, when they gave them to mice who were genetically primed to get melanoma, who'd been painted with something on their skin to give them melanoma, it found that those two antioxidants made the melanoma spread more.
Mm-hmm.
So those two specific antioxidants in mice with that certainly caused the cancer to be worse in that particular situation. But the suggestion then was that antioxidants could potentially cause cancer. There's not one shred of evidence for that in human beings. There was one trial done in 1994, this is a terrific one, Pete, called the ATBC trial of 29,000 Finnish smokers over 8 years. Now, the clue's in the title there. And they found that if they gave them a synthetic version of beta-carotene, which is a lousy antioxidant, 20 milligrams a day, there was a slight increase in lung cancer. So the headlines came out, antioxidants may cause cancer. No. It's a thing called smoking that causes cancer. And don't combine it with a lousy synthetic antioxidant, which is a bit like what we're talking about in this other trial. And so what a lot of conservative researchers try to do is damn high-quality supplements that have proven benefits for other conditions and by suggesting there's a potential cancer risk with these things. And it really does my head in, Pete, because the science is very, very bad. This was a very well-conducted study on mice who were genetically primed to get melanoma, who were painted with something on their skin to give them melanoma. And that was well conducted in that particular group. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about whether humans, early on in their life, should also be supplementing with vitamins. And look, I think the most important message for all of us is the five keys of being healthy. Have no addictions, good quality sleep, good quality eating with natural fresh foods, 3 to 5 hours every week of exercise and happiness. Beat any supplement, pill or medical procedure anyone can give you. But if you get to your 30s and 40s, I think it's a good idea to take a multivitamin, to take some fish oil. When you get into your 50s, to take some Bergamet. And these things work partially by antioxidants, but other ways as well. And I think they give you an extra benefit over and above the lifestyle.
Great advice, Ross, no doubt about that. Josephine's in the round. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yeah, go for it, Josephine.
Hello, doctor. And I have a problem with blood pressure. In the mornings when I wake up, I take my blood pressure reading, and it's around about 182, 186.
Yep.
During the day, it goes down. I've just taken it now, it's 118. Is that a problem or not?
No, in fact, the worst time to take your blood pressure is first thing in the morning, because it's always at its highest, because you go from being asleep, so your system is very relaxed, to getting out of bed and having to start the day. So if you're, are you taking pills as well, Josephine?
I'll just take Cardiprin and Panadol Osteo.
So you're on no blood pressure pills?
No.
The key with blood pressure is what it's like most of the time. If it's at 182 first thing in the morning, but then it settles down very quickly, well, then that's not an issue. But if you're 182 for half the day, then it comes down in the afternoon, you probably should be on some sort of blood pressure pill before you go to bed to cover that. And also, when somebody gets blood pressure like that in the morning, I wonder whether you may have sleep apnea during the night, which can drive up your blood pressure.
Oh, okay.
So they're the sort of things to talk to your doctor about, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Josephine. Appreciate your call. We're with Dr. Ross Walker. We've got a few lines free at 9221 882. Raymond, you're up next.
You're listening to Afternoons for Slater and Gordon Lawyers, supporters of the... Until 3, this is Peter Bell.
We're talking health with Dr. Ross Walker. Got a stack of calls now, so let's get to them. Raymond in Southlake, go for it.
G'day, Doctor.
Hello, Raymond. How can I help you, mate?
I've got double vision.
Yeah.
It come on suddenly. Mm-hmm. I've been to a doctor already, and he said it'll come back naturally. Well, nothing's happened yet, so how long it's going to take, I don't know.
When did it start, Raymond?
About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago now. Yeah, must be 2 weeks, yeah.
No, look, I think if someone gets sudden onset double vision, it's really important to go and see a neurologist.
Seen him already.
And he said it's nothing, it'll go away.
Yeah, and he said they'll come back. That's what he told me.
But did he tell you the cause for it?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, see, when someone gets sudden onset double vision, are you diabetic?
No, I've got nothing wrong with me at all. I'm 84, by the way.
Yeah.
And I've got nothing wrong. No medicines, no pills or potions I take, anything.
Yeah, and when something like this happens, there's often a little blockage to the blood vessels that supply the different nerves in the eye.
Uh-huh.
So you can either have what we call a third nerve palsy or a sixth nerve palsy. And the neurologist is right. It typically gets better. It may take a few months. But he did do CT scans of your brain or an MRI or something like that, I hope.
No. It just put some doctor in my eye and looked at my eye with these machines.
Sorry, that was an ophthalmologist. That wasn't a neurologist.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
so
sorry.
No, I'd like you to see a neurologist, a brain specialist, because it goes beyond just what an ophthalmologist does.
I think
you need to see a neurologist about that, okay?
Good on you, Raymond. Have to keep moving along, so as soon as possible, go and see a neurologist. Dave in Hocking.
Yeah, g'day, Doctor.
Hello, Dave.
Yeah, the other day I started getting dizzy. Like, when I got up, I nearly fell over, you know. And I went to the doctor, and he put me on some pills, Prozine, a big word, APOPROCHLOR, PERAZINE.
Yeah, okay.
And I feel better now, but I just wondered what's the cause of that, you know? Well, okay. It could be that.
Well, firstly, there are three types of dizziness. One is where you get a sensation where the room's spinning. We call that vertigo or vertigo. Then there's a feeling that everything's going black, and that's where your blood pressure drops. And the third one is where you just feel a bit wonky. Which one did you have?
The third one.
So you just felt a bit wonky, but the room wasn't spinning.
That's
typically due to either a neck problem or a problem with your eyes. It really doesn't have a lot to do with a problem with the inner ear, which is what your doctor's treating with the Prochlor or Perazine for.
It was probably
you did your neck overnight. Your neck went into spasm and it affected the blood flow going up to the back of the brain. Made you feel a bit wonky.
Oh, yeah.
So if it keeps happening, you need to see someone about it. But it seems like it's settled down anyhow.
Thanks, Dave. Have to leave it there. Got a lot of calls now. Kath in Mandurah.
Hello.
Go, Kath.
I'm 80 and I'm about to have a horrible rotator cuff operation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had an ultrasound, but he didn't order a MRI. On the ultrasound, it showed that the tendons had torn away from the bone.
Yeah, well, you probably don't need an MRI then.
Oh, okay, because he said sometimes if you go in and have a look with an arthroscope, if the tendons are frayed, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And I thought, well, couldn't he tell if they were frayed by looking at the X-ray, at the ultrasound?
Well, not always, but he should be able to repair it, unless there was a really big problem with the tendons and they have been frayed. But I just think he was covering all bases. I suspect he'll be able to repair it. Okay.
Oh, okay. It's a pretty big tear, that's all. A complete tear of the, what do they call it, of the supersaturate something?
The supraspinatus
muscle. Yes, away from the bone. Yeah,
that's it. You know, you should be able to sew that one up.
Okay. Right. Good on you, Kath. Good luck with that one. Pete in Melville.
Oh, hi, guys. Last Easter, I got had two little bites from pepper ticks, and I left it for about a month, and it didn't get any better. Went to the doc. He gave me some antibiotics. But that's 8 months now, and all he's given me is Alufrat, and said it would last. The itching would last maybe up to a year. But I've got probably 30 places where it's come out on the skin, and it's just a devil of a thing.
Right. So you've got rashes everywhere. Is that what you're saying?
Just they're like a mosquito bite. They come from
and they're
inside out. Something.
Incredibly itchy.
Oh, terrible.
And have you seen a dermatologist or just your GP?
Our GP sent me to the dermatologist when it didn't get any better,
Yeah, and what did the dermatologist say?
Just said that I had blood poisoning from that and the saliva from the tick, and that it could last up to a year before my blood is cleared.
See, what I tend to do when people have tick bites is there's a very good antibiotic called vibromycin, which I think is the best thing for that, and I give up to 3 months of vibromycin orally with food. That tends to settle it down. But if you're getting incredibly itchy, the combination of a good antihistamine with Zantac, which is actually used for ulcers, but actually blocks the histamine response. And if it's really bad, there's an old style antidepressant called Doxepan that you can take at night. It helps you sleep, but also blocks the histamine response completely, so you don't itch as much. So that would be my approach, probably to a trial of vibromycin for a few months, which is a antibiotic. You've got to get it on a script with those three things to try and block the itch for you.
Okay, Pete, we've got a couple more calls to get to. Just a reminder to everyone, this segment will be up on the website so you can have a listen to Ross again if you want to rehear the instructions. Marilyn in Hammond Park, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Dr. Ross, I took your advice and I'm going to have a calcium score test on Tuesday.
Good.
I have high cholesterol that I took myself off Crestor and it was very high 6 months later.
Yep.
So I've asked for a calcium score test, but I've been quoted $450.
They're probably talking about the intravenous angiogram. Mm. So you don't want that test. You only want the calcium score test, which is much cheaper. Now, if someone's charging $450 for a calcium score by itself, I think that's highway robbery.
Well, I do too, after hearing what you said. That's why I'm ringing up.
You said downstairs, the people downstairs from me charge $120.
Okay, Marilyn, sorry, we have to cut it off there. And apologies to Brett, who wanted to ask about butter margarine, but we don't have time for that. Brett, if you're listening next week at 12:30 at this time, we'll get into the butter margarine debate, and you can ask Ross your question then. Ross, thanks so much.
Talk to you next week, mate.
There's Dr. Ross Walker back at 12:30 next Wednesday.